of the Yard. Stories of the war against crime, as told by the detective of the century, ex-superintendent Robert Fabian. When Superintendent Fabian gave up his job at Scotland Yard in 1949, the police lost a brilliant detective, and the public was given for the first time the opportunity of hearing the inside story of the way Scotland Yard goes to work to solve every kind of crime known to man. And here is Mr. Fabian himself.
During my 28 years with the London Metropolitan Police, I've often heard the comment that it must give a policeman a thrill to run a criminal to earth and know that he's got his man. That, of course, is quite true, though probably not to the extent that people imagine. It's often forgotten that a policeman's job is to prevent crime when he can, rather than pat himself on the back for catching a criminal afterwards. I can explain this best by giving you an example, and probably one of the most interesting is that which became known as the Antiquis murder, a case that received a lot of publicity at the time, and one which you yourselves may remember very well.
It was early in the afternoon of a sunny April day in 1947 that three young masked men rushed into Jay's jewelry shop in London's West End and attempted to seize goods from an open safe. Undeterred by the revolvers in the gunman's hands, the director of the firm slammed the safe door. A brief free-for-all scuffle followed when one of the gunmen demanded the keys of the safe. And the manager threw a stool at him for an answer.
The keys. Come on, you. Hand over the keys or I'll let you have it.
Look out, Doc!
Why, you?
What's that old goat behind you?
Get away from me, goat!
Yeah.
The place is filling up. Come on, we've got to blow.
One of the gunmen fired a shot. The bullet crashed into the shop wall. But this momentarily halted the concerted attack by shop assistants led by the manager, long enough for the cooks to make a break out of the shop and flee in a panic down Charlotte Street. A lorry stood in the way of their escape car. Frantically, they left it and rushed off down the street, wild-eyed with fright, and all the more dangerous as a result. People on the pavement scattered before their menacing guns. And then a motorcyclist, with great presence of mind, flung his machine sideways in a sweeping skid, hoping to run them down.
You won't try that again!
And a bullet smashed its way into the skull of Alex the Antiquis, the father of six children, whose only offense had been that he'd tried to arrest an enemy of society.
Yes, Fabian.
A forensic science here, Mr. Fabian. We've been all over that stolen car with a micro camera. Result, nil.
What's the story on the weapon?
Mr. Churchill reports that it was a 32 center fire revolver.
Right. Anything else?
No, sir. That's the lot.
All right. Report back here.
Yes.
Oh, come on in, Higgins. What did you get?
27 descriptions by eyewitnesses, Chief. They all swear they saw the gunman very clearly.
Right. Good.
I'm afraid not. All 27 descriptions are different.
Oh, no.
Yeah, look at these. Three enormous men. Dodgy little. So, they wore battle dress jackets. No hats. Caps over their eyes.
That's enough. Not a clue. Not a clue anywhere. An innocent man is shot down in a crowded street, and the murder is banished without trace.
Well, what's the next move?
The next move is a cup of strong black coffee.
Oh.
And if you can think of anything better, I'll be glad to hear of it.
For the moment, Fabian and his men were beaten. The man in the street, the public, often so helpful in solving crimes, had let them down. Or so they thought. Then the hoped-for lead came from a cab driver and a schoolboy.
Oh, morning. Grubb's my name, Superintendent. It's about that murder in Charlotte Street.
Yeah. Were you there at the time, Mr. Grubb?
Yes. I'm a cab driver, you see. Well, a young fellow with a scarf tied round his face jumped on my running board. At the time, I didn't think anything of it. I thought he was a cheeky larrikin, so I shoved him off. Oh, I had a fair insight already, you see. Well, then he and this other young fella rushed into a building off Tottenham Court Road.
This was when, Mr. Grubb?
The day of the murder. That's why I thought I'd better let you know.
Now, that was very sensible of you. Now, can we have the whole story from the beginning? You were driving your cab along Tottenham Court Road.
The ballistic expert says it's definitely the murder weapon, Chief.
Found in the mud of the Thames, low tide, eh?
Yeah, that's right. Whopping.
That's interesting. Do you know exactly where?
I assure you. Where's that map? Here we are. The boy said he picked the gun up about here.
Less than a quarter of a mile from the place where Jenkins' wife's parents live.
Jenkins?
Oh, I forgot. I haven't brought you up to date on the raincoat.
You mean the one you found in the building where Grubb saw the two masked men?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
We traced it through the manufacturers to one of the three shops in London, and finally to a flat in Bermondsey. People shilly-shallied a lot, but when we put the pressure on them, none of them was willing to own a coat involved in a murder charge.
Mm.
So they eventually pointed the finger at the real owner.
And that was Jenkins?
Jenkins. I'm having him lined up with the others for witnesses to identify.
But the witnesses let Fabian down. Jenkins, cheeky, assured, knew all the tricks. And even asked for a lunch edition newspaper to be brought to him to make witnesses think it couldn't be this man. He was on the street only a few minutes ago. Weary from days of camping out at the police station, Fabian, for the moment, was checked.
All right, Jenkins, you can go.
Thanks. Better luck next time, Super. I might be able to help you remember something about that raincoat. If you want to know, you can send for me.
Browning, keep after him.
Right, sir. Jenkins had played his part very well. Too well. From his experience with criminals, Fabian knew that the innocent man is usually too concerned to have as much assurance as Jenkins displayed. And his hunch that Jenkins was one of the wanted men was too strong to be ignored. What Jenkins didn't know was that Fabian had had his men make a careful check on his associates, and the patient work involved was destined to pay off. In the meantime, Fabian saw Jenkins again and asked him more about the raincoat. Jenkins, growing daily more confident of his immunity, gave the police a story that he had lent the coat to a man named Walsh.
Walsh didn't have anything to do with this case, Higgins. It's obvious Jenkins tried to involve him as revenge for an old double-cross Walsh pulled on him.
And he succeeded in panicking Walsh into confessing to the Queensway robbery.
Yes, that's right. That eliminates Walsh, as we know.
Mm.
In the meantime, we have the fact that a second gun was found in the river mud at Wapping.
As you say, a quarter of a mile from the home of Jenkins in Lord.
Exactly. And there is still his business of Garrity and Rolfe.
Ah, yes. Jenkins' associate. But you said Garrity won't talk about Jenkins.
No, he's like a clam. He and Jenkins were in the Borstal prison together, apparently.
Yeah. That makes it tough.
Not so tough. There's still Rolfe. We know that neither Jenkins nor Garrity have known Rolfe very long. Rolfe is younger, less experienced in crime. Now then, we'll get told of Garrity again.
And question him about Rolfe.
Exactly. Not Jenkins, but Rolfe. I think Garrity might be persuaded to give away enough to make a case against Rolfe where he won't say anything about Jenkins.
And then?
And then we'll have a little talk to Rolfe about Garrity and Jenkins.
And that was the way Fabian went about it. There was no third degree, no bullying, just patient, shrewd questioning and answers that became less restrained, less careful as time went on. Garrity, confronted by the known facts, eventually implicated himself. And when it was suggested that the police knew Rolfe was one of the murderers, he admitted it without compunction. But Jenkins' name he wouldn't mention, and nothing the police could say would move him on that point. Fabian, undismayed, arrested Rolfe and told him what Garrity had said. And the nervous, terror-stricken young man poured out the full story, including the part played by Jenkins.
Jenkins, Geraghty, and Rolfe were all convicted of the murder of Alex the Antiquist. Rolfe, too young for the death penalty, was given an indeterminate prison sentence. 4 months to the day after they were charged, Geraghty and Jenkins were hanged at Pentonville Prison.
I mentioned something earlier about preventing crime, and you'll be wondering what this has to do with the death of an innocent man. Well, it's this. For weeks after the hanging of Jenkins and Geraghty, the police began finding guns, abandoned in parks, under bushes, dropped in dust bins, fished up from the Thames, mud at low tide. The men of the underworld had decided to think twice about using guns in London. So when I think about antiquities these days, it's as one good life lost, but also 1,000 lives saved.